Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an NFL commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Part two.
I'm Greg Wyshynski of ESPN. If I sound a little different, it's because I'm doing this from a Courtyard by Marriott in Denver, Colorado, as I've been dispatched to cover the outdoor hockey game that I would wager 3% of hockey fans know is happening this weekend.
That seems high.
Yeah, I'm Ryan Lambert from this podcast, and I'm at sea level. So,
yeah, and
yes, I'm
Sean McAdoo from The Athletic, and I'm here in below 3 feet of snow in Ottawa. So, I get to go shovel as soon as we finish.
There's like constant snow here, it seems like. There's like snow falling now, there's snow on the ground. I'm really looking forward to the outdoor game this weekend because, as everybody knows, there's nothing that gets me going better than the pageantry of celebrating our military at a sporting
Finally,
event.
Finally, we're giving the troops the respect they deserve. A salute to the troops.
It does make me wonder in like 15 years, if we're still doing these outdoor games, if we'll in fact have one at the Space Force Academy. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, think it would have to be a USA versus Russia kind of affair, just because how else is everybody getting to the International Space Station?
Are you suggesting
that Canada's space program is not sufficient?
Well, look, there's that one astronaut that's good at Twitter
we've
got or
that
whatever
one guy, and we've got the
kitchen
arm.
A ride. Frankly,
we built an arm, man. If we build the rest of the spaceship, you guys
it's
are done for.
Freaking International Space Station, right? Is that something?
Could be.
Okay.
So the Space Force would be played on the moon or some such, or what?
A meteor, big meteor, yeah. Ceres, whatever it's called.
I think wherever mm-hmm. President for Life Trump wants to put it, it'll be fine.
That makes a lot of sense. So yeah, and then also Capitals tonight, as we do the podcast, are in Colorado to take on the mighty Avs. Going to see if OV can do the thing tonight and go from there. But there's a lot to talk about, so let's get cracking. I guess we'll start off with the sad news of the week, which was Jay Bouwmeester had a cardiac incident. Situation. I don't know what you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
I forget what the technical term was. And crisis, emergency, and collapse on the bench. And for those of us that have been watching hockey for a long time, that is the scariest shit because
yeah,
we've seen it happen many times before with people. And as has been pointed out by many, I marvel at how prepared everybody is in a situation like this.
Yep.
To revive him, they needed a defibrillator. What his teammates did, the trainers, hospital staff, every fucking person working in concert with each other
and
saved this guy's life.
The amazing thing is the Anaheim Ducks doctors, this is their second time having done this. So,
that's true.
We criticize this league for a million different things, including a lot of player safety stuff, like how they handle players after the fact and how they enforce certain rules, and rightfully so. But when it comes to a situation like this, they really do have very, very good people ready to go who are very good at their jobs. And that's probably the only reason why we haven't seen somebody drop dead during a game. I mean, not to be over the top about it, but that's literally the situation that was in play, and we avoided a tragedy because the people were ready to go. They knew what to do. They knew what they needed to do it with, and everybody did their thing. And just a kudos to them, and a thank you to them from everybody, including hockey fans who obviously I think a lot of us were when you first saw that footage, you're thinking the worst. and luckily for us, didn't turn out that way.
Now, I would like us to be the league that can save a guy's life in a cardiac emergency and do more than fine Zdeno Chara for cross-checking a guy in the throat.
Yeah.
I mean, if we could maybe balance those two things at some point, I really feel like that's the ideal NHL.
Yeah, or not be actively denying the other serious health problems that many of our former players have and all of that. But you know what? That's a leadership issue, and this wasn't about leadership. This is about people being there and being ready and doing their job in a situation where, you know, somebody being a minute late could have been the difference literally between life and death. So
And then on top of that, dude, like I was also really impressed because the Blues went to Vegas after that, right? Mm-hmm. And I was impressed the Golden Knights set up like counselors for the Blues players the next couple days.
Cool. Yeah,
that was really cool. Like the care that's now taken in these situations to not only obviously take care of the player in crisis, mm-hmm. but also to make sure that their teammates
the fact that they just canceled the game pretty much instantly, from everything we've heard, like no pushback from anyone, even though it's going to screw up the schedule, even though there really is no way to slot that game back in without moving other stuff around. Like this is, you know, it feels like the sort of thing 10, 20 years ago, we would have expected these guys to just suck it up, keep playing. You're fine. You know, you're hockey players, you're warriors. And, you know, now it sounds ridiculous to say it, but it's good that we can at least acknowledge that seeing your friend and teammate almost die in front of you is, you know, we can stop and acknowledge that, hey, that's pretty screwed up and a little bit more important than who wins one of your 82 regular season games.
I was sort of fascinated by the logistical aftermath, though. Like they were saying, this is February now. It's a condensed schedule. They're going to have to kind of like move a few different games around so the Ducks and the Blues can make up the game. And I was also interested that they're going to play a 60-minute game, but it's going to start at 1-1, which I think is what they've done in the past for situations like this.
Yeah, that was Rich Peverly situation too.
Yeah, take away the stats, but that's a really fascinating thing. So anyways, yeah.
They should just do the thing they do it in baseball sometimes where they schedule it for like the last day of the season, and if like St. Louis doesn't need it for the seeding or the Ducks don't need it for maybe – I mean they're not going to make the playoffs, but they should just be like, forget it. That's fine. Mm. Everybody gets the goals and we'll just, you know, mark it down as didn't happen. They played 81 games this year.
It does set up the possibility, and this is, you know, obviously this has nothing to do with in the range of importance with the Bomeister situation, but it does set up the possibility where somebody could tie Nathan Horton's record, NHL record, for the most goals scored in a game in which you did not play. Because he actually, from the Rich Peverly game, he scored a goal in that game. The stats counted. When they replayed it, he was not in the lineup. So he has credit for a goal scored in a game he did not play. And I said that record was unbreakable, but I guess somebody could have broke if they had two goals in that game. They didn't. But if you're into weird, incredibly weird stats, that is a situation that's in play because the goals go in the book as, I think, being scored at like 0 minutes and 0 seconds of the first period, and they just play the whole thing.
Yeah, so yes, keep an eye on Adam Henrique and Ivan Barbashev. Those are the guys who scored. I think both those guys will probably be in their respect. Well, hey, Christ, Henrique might get traded, right? That's theoretically
it's always
possible. Yeah.
But seriously, though, suck it, Ovechkin. Try breaking that record, right? Yeah.
He'll do it. Exactly.
If he gets traded, that'd be even better. That'd be the most goals scored in a game involving two teams that you neither of which
you even play for. Yeah.
That's awesome.
So trade Adam Henrique. I'm sure his contract is borderline unmovable, but
for the sake of the record, absolutely. There were the other health considerations since we did our last show of a much less severe nature. McDavid's out, multiple weeks?
Two or three, but maybe less. Well, so they're like, it's 2 to 3, but we're hopeful it could be. And what they're really saying is, don't put all your tickets on StubHub, please. We're trying to.
Yeah.
I mean, luckily they have the Hart Trophy winner, you know, healthy right now.
They might.
Oh, Alex Ovechkin. Okay. Just kidding.
But
we were saying that last week.
The thing about McDavid is, like, it's normally it's a running thing with me that every time somebody tells us how long a player is going to be out, it's always less. And then we always act amazed that somebody has come back early. And it's like, yeah, it's that literally every time a team says, this is how long a guy's going to be out, and he comes, like, Vladimir Tarasenko is kind of doing the same thing. We're always amazed. Except the thing is, when it's the Oilers and McDavid, like, we've already been through this once where they lied to us about how serious his injury was, right? They were like, oh, he's fine. Mm-hmm. He's going to be okay for training camp. And then halfway through the season, they put out a documentary that's like, yeah, his leg almost fell off and we had to, like, reattach it. So I think everyone's a little skeptical, especially since he kind of got hurt, tried to come back. Then he was going to practice the next day, but only for half. And he was going to be okay. And then suddenly they're like, yeah, he might miss 3 weeks. I think a lot of people are sort of like, do we know for sure that it's not even more serious than that? Only because of who's involved, but... yeah, he'll probably come back in a week and a half, and we'll all act surprised.
Yeah. Speaking of medical staffs you can't trust, thanks to Carey Price's various ailments through the years, the Montreal Canadiens announced that Shea Weber is going to miss.
Career ending.
All right, now that wasn't the Montreal Canadiens. That was former Sportsnet pundit Nick Kyprios. Yes. So I'm not sure what he's up to these days. I'm tweeted out.
He got his medical license, and he was there for.
he went to the same postgraduate studies as Dr. Recchi back in the day in Boston.
He
said that Shea Weber's career might be threatened, and then the Habs came out a few hours later and like, actually, it's going to be back by the end of the month or whatever.
Right. So
what was that?
Well, what it was is because Kyprios did clarify a little bit, and he kind of said that. He stands by what he tweeted, which was that there was concern that it was related to the foot injury he had last year and that it might be ligament related and it might be the sort of thing where you'd need surgery or what have you. And then the Canadians came out and said, no, it's a bad sprain. And this is kind of one of those things where this happens every now and then where there's one report comes out and then it seems to get contradicted and everybody yells back and forth and the usual people show up and say fake news, the media makes things up, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And my thought is always, okay, is there a way that both of these things could potentially have some truth to them and the truth is kind of in the middle somewhere? And in this case, yeah, I mean, it is possible that there was genuine concern that it was a ligament problem and then either A, it turned out to just be a sprain, or B, it turned out to be a sprain and maybe some ligament damage, but that wasn't that serious or serious enough that they're particularly concerned about him being shut down, while at the same time being the sort of thing that could resurface and be a lingering issue that could genuinely affect him for the rest of his career. I mean, Kyprios, as much as we joke, he didn't say Shea Weber's career is over. He kind of said this is something that could have an impact on the rest of his career, and maybe it still would. Because Nick Kyprios doesn't make things up. Like, Nick Kyprios isn't just sitting there going, I'm going to invent something just so I can get yelled at on Twitter. He got this
finally,
from somebody.
Someone's here to defend Nick Kyprios.
Yeah.
But look, Shawn Michaels suffered a career-ending injury and came back in like 7 years. I think Shea Weber has at least that much left on this deal.
Uh-oh.
You never know.
Did Shea Weber lose his smile, though? That would be the...
Oh, that's the real question.
Yeah, he got traded to Montreal. Did you not hear about this?
Oh, shit. No, but that's the thing. Like, but once you put the, is his career going to be threatened, like, notion into the ether, I mean, everybody ran to Cap Friendly to find out what their recapture penalties
were going
to be.
Which
like,
is ridiculous. To because
the best. The
and
best.
I don't... But it reveals again that, like, there's a tremendous number of fans out there who don't understand how cap recapture works. If somebody's hurt, there is no cap recapture. You don't get like if let's just say the worst case interpretation of Kyprios's tweet turned out to be right and Shea Weber had suffered a career ending. He's going to go on the long-term injured reserve, continue to collect his money. No, there's no cap recapture.
No, of course.
There is a cap. The Habs have to continue to carry him on his cap, but they would just get the overage and, you know, it doesn't quite disappear, but it kind of does. But yeah, I was amazed how many fans were
I mean, If that were what happened, Shea Weber would be an Ottawa senator very soon.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. Or a coyote or whatever.
I was thinking about the fact that, like, I wonder what they'd do if it got down to it, because obviously, like, Nashville has the vast majority of the impact of the recapture.
It's a stupid rule that is unbelievably badly implemented, to the point where if Shea Weber – let's take the injury out of it. If Shea Weber retired on this – what was it, a 14-year deal – that the Predators didn't even come up with, by the way. It was an offer sheet by the Flyers, but fine. They matched
Shouldn't have matched it.
If he retired 6 years early, they take a $4 million a year cap hit for 6 years. But if he retires just 1 year early, so in other words, he plays out 13 of the 14 years, according to the rule, Nashville takes a $24 million cap penalty for 1 year.
I really hope he does it. Oh my God, that would be the funniest thing in the world. That would be so good.
It would be absolutely incredible.
It's such
a
stupid rule. But at the same time, like, I've for years said it was a stupid rule and that no team would ever actually have to pay a penalty. And now Vancouver does because of Luongo. So if you take it off the books, also then Canuck fans are going to be furious, which also funny. But it's such a stupid, terrible rule. It's probably theoretical because now that he's got some sort of foot problem, some sort of ligament problem that is lingering in some way, that's your ticket to him just at some point, absolutely. Instead of retiring, saying, I can't play because of my foot.
For those who may not know what we're talking about, it is like 8 years ago now that they implemented this rule. It was the rule in place that was meant to punish the teams that handed out what are called backdiving contracts, where the base salary of the contract by the end of the like 12 or 13 year deal ends up being basically what somebody at Wendy's makes because they want to bring down the cap hit. Right.
Yeah.
So since NHL is a bunch of cowards and they couldn't tell Rocky Wirtz and the Ilitch family not to hand out these fucking contracts, then everybody has to suffer.
Well, no, everybody has to suffer because somebody gamed the system effectively. Like,
effectively,
that's the real problem,
but,
right? That they beat the system.
The people that gamed the system were the people that created the system.
No, I understand that. But, like, then they did it because they were the rich teams that could afford to pay guys forever, basically.
Right.
And they were like, oh, yeah, fuck it, who cares?
And then they signed these contracts. But the thing is, the league approved the contracts.
Correct.
Approved the contracts.
And then years later.
Legal contracts. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
And then years later, decided to make up this incredibly punitive rule and didn't think it through because the problem with the Predators is basically the way the rule goes is whatever you save on the cap hit at the front of the contract, you have to pay back at the end of the contract. But if a guy plays and the salary flip-flops, that number gets less and less. But because the Predators traded him away before the backdiving part, the number doesn't get any smaller. So if he had stayed a Predator the whole time, the way the rule is set up now kind of works if we accept that it should even exist at all. But the fact that he gets traded halfway through completely screws it up. I mean, there's no way that the NHL is going to make Nashville like a non-traditional market that kind of needs all the boost it can get, it just blow up their cap for 1 year because of some stupid rule signed on a contract signed 13 years ago by a different team for a player who doesn't even play there anymore. But I don't know how they wiggle out of it. Part of me thinks this is going to end with the rule being taken off the books and the Canucks getting some cap space back as a bit because they're the only team that's had to pay it. But it's such a stupid rule, and it's one of those things where, like, you just look at it, anytime you're like, oh, man, are people like Sean being too harsh on the NHL leadership? And then you look at this, and you go, no, he's exactly right.
Right. And I'm sorry, I apologize on behalf of the Devils. It's our fault, because we gave Ilya Kovalchuk a 17-year contract.
But that contract did not get approved.
Like
the NHL
25 cents.
The NHL exercised their right to not approve.
The other nonsense one, but I think that was the point of demarcation for this stuff. Like they just decided they weren't going to allow any of it anymore, and then they went back and punished teams. Although, you know, to speak to your Canucks theory, like the Devils' punishment was basically like removed at some point, wasn't it? They were going to have to give up a one.
Exactly.
Jesus.
Really cool.
cap recapture is a very confusing thing. The cap is a very confusing thing. A lot of you out there might feel like your heads are spinning right now, and if they are, you might need to find a comfortable couch to lay down on. Today's episode of Bug Soup is sponsored by Burrow. You know, even though New Year's resolution season is over, there's still a lot of new stuff to get excited about. A new decade, new election, maybe you're doing a new health regimen, all that stuff. So with all this newness in the air, maybe you're noticing that the overstuffed, flaky vinyl couch that you got secondhand from Craigslist is due for an upgrade. Make a change everyone can get behind and put your behind on by replacing it with a brand new Burrow sofa. Here's the deal with Burrow. You can kind of custom it to your satisfaction. It's got durable fabric that's naturally scratch and stain resistant, built-in USB chargers into the couch so you don't have to get up and plug in your shit anymore. You could pick your fabric color, your leg finish, armrest style, length. You could add a chaise lounge, which I highly recommend for those nights when you just need to get away from the world and put your feet up for a little bit. We have one. It's great. And you could set it up yourself in minutes. You could add or remove seats as needed. You can convert it into a love seat. All the cool stuff that you want from a couch, and Burrow's got it. It's more than just sofas, too. Burrow's genius sleep kit transforms your comfy sofa into an even comfier bed. And they also offer a collection of rugs, coffee tables, love seats, armchairs, all the stuff that you'll need for a kick-ass living room. Free one-week shipping, and here's what you got to do. Get 75 buckaroos off your purchase and free 1 week shipping at burrow.com/puck. That's burrow.com/puck for $75 off at Burrow. We got a new couch last year, and let me tell you, if you're not someone that splurge on a couch, you come to realize you spend 70% of your life there. And so go to Burrow, 75 bucks off a good couch, get one now. Our thanks to Burrow, a new friend here on Puck Soup. Connor, Shea Weber, Kadri's hurt too. There was one other one that was kind of a bummer. Ah, never mind. Anyways, we had a trade to announce this week, which was that Jason Zucker is now a member of the Pittsburgh Penguins. It always kind of fascinates me when teams are like after one specific odd player for like multiple years. Like we've been trying to get Jason Zucker for like 2 years. I mean, I think he's a fine player. I think on Sid's wing, he can get back to his contract year offensive levels, but it's kind of just strange that it's like, we have been on the Zucker chase since last summer. We finally got our man, but it was a good trade for both sides. I felt.
Yeah, no, the Penguins, you know, it doesn't matter what Kalen Addison is going to be 3 years from now, because Crosby and Malkin are going to be like, and Letang are going to be like 35, 36 years old, right? Mm-hmm. And it's the same for a pick that's going to be, what, 27th overall, something like that. You know, they needed to go get a guy, and they got a guy who's signed for 2 seasons after this one. And so, yeah, I like, people were like, oh, you know, the Penguins are really emptying the cupboard. It's like, you know.
Are they?
Well, I mean, insofar as Addison was their best prospect, and, you know, teams are always loath to give up a first-round pick. But, like, yeah, they have bigger things to worry about than, like, again, like, 2 guys who might make their roster in a couple of seasons, you know?
Yeah.
I thought a lot about Paul Fenton when this trade happened, and how Billy Guerin got a top prospect and a first for Zucker, and Paul Fenton was like one Phil Kessel, yeah, I'll go to Minnesota, away from getting Kessel and fucking Jack Johnson in a trade instead for Zucker.
Almost as if Paul Fenton maybe was not super good at that
not
job.
So good at his job.
I'm with Ryan. I'd like this for both teams. I think Minnesota got more than fair value, which is what you want to do, especially when you're a relatively new GM like Bill Guerin, and this is kind of your first major trade, and you've got a market where I think it's fair to say confidence is low among that fan base. This gives them a nice boost, and it is a nice deal. And at the same time, you're Pittsburgh, you're not worried about 3 or 5 years from now. You've got a window to win as many championships as possible with two slam dunk first ballot Hall of Famers on the roster, and they're not, I mean, they're not in their prime anymore as far as what that means these days, but they're still at playing at an elite level, who knows for how long. Yeah, get as many good hard swings at the edit as you can, and if that means 5 years from now you're looking like the Kings look now, you live with that, and that's it, you know, that's it. And any Penguin fan who wants to complain, I mean, you're just going to get another franchise player anyways, probably coming along around that time. So
yeah, no shit.
Just yeah, you just go for it. Flags fly forever, and get as many as you can.
Hmm. If you put Taylor Hall on the Penguins, like, what would happen to the draft lottery if they were ever in the lottery?
Yeah, that
would they somehow end up with the first three picks?
Yeah, they get a clone of Connor McDavid and Mario Lemieux put together. Yeah. Like, it's just
Bill Daly holding 14 different cards that are all Penguins logos. Like, what?
They're all the different Penguins logos through history.
Exactly.
It's a good deal. I don't mind it, and I'm sure Zucker is going to make them look real smart by like scoring at a 30 goal pace. Where are we on the Penguins as a cup contender this year? Because they're
looking really goddamn good, man.
Really good, but the goaltending is like the one area.
Yeah, do you trust Tristan Jarry to be this good for the rest of the year and then the postseason? I maybe don't, but you know, Matt Murray looks like shit now, and he won two cups in a row. So you know.
But is there such a thing as playoff Matt Murray? Like, is playoff Matt Murray like playoff Braden Holtby, or Matt Murray just garbage now?
And you know what? It probably not. But if he thinks that is true, sometimes in short term, like, just maybe that's enough. That little boost of confidence, that little chip on the shoulder, is enough for the team to sit there and go, hey, you know what, if it doesn't work out with Jerry, then we've got a two-time cup winner ready to come in. That probably
look, Jordan Binnington won a cup last year. I mean, you don't have to be the greatest goalie in the world.
My God.
It's true.
I just...
He was an okay AHL goalie.
The Chris Osgooding of Jordan Binnington continues on this very podcast.
Yeah. He was incredible
last year, and he won them the cup.
Chris Osgood had a couple of good years too, Greg. This time last year, he was Tristan Jarry, right? Like, he was the unproven, do you really trust this guy?
That's what I'm saying.
And sometimes the answer is, who the hell knows what's going to happen with goaltending? So if you're Pittsburgh and you've got, you know, you don't have that superstar. You don't have that guy who's you really feel good is going to play, give you 920, 925 goaltending, but you've got two guys, either one of which could get hot. Maybe that's enough. Maybe that's all you can do. And then, because the rest of the lineup is pretty good, and they're really well
plus
coached.
They're getting Gensel back at some point. They've been missing him.
Yep. And the division is going to be tough to get out of, but I don't know that it looks quite as scary as it did maybe a couple months ago. There's a path there. They're going to be one of the 6 to 8 teams that you feel pretty good about their chances heading into the playoffs, and that's probably as far as any of us can go on this stuff these days.
Yeah, and in terms of where they are in the standings and games in hand and stuff like that, they're basically a winning, like, a point and a half back of Washington.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. You know, like, that's...
Do you like their bottom six enough?
I don't like Washington's bottom six particularly large amount either. Like, they're a team that, you know, Ovechkin's scoring a ton of goals, but he's pretty much the only one doing it. What's he got, like 20% of their goals?
You throw Lars Eller on any line, it's going to be all right. So at least they got that going for him.
Yeah, and
Washington.
That, you know, there's a bunch of guys like that on the Penguins too, where it's like, that's a perfectly adequate, like, Zach Aston-Reese kind of a guy. You know, like, those guys, they're getting it done so far, and they got it done for most of last year. So I don't know why all of a sudden we're like, I don't trust these Penguins.
One thing we didn't talk about, I just realized, in this entire Zucker thing, is Galchenyuk. Like, what the fuck? Like, are we looking at a bust? Is it bust time? Or do we believe that there is a...
I don't think you can call him a bust when he did score 30 goals relatively early in his career.
Yeah, but he
but
did
I
it
think,
once. You yeah. know, like...
I think he's certainly a guy that I'm concerned about now. Like, I'm not... I mean, and it sounds like, from the point of view of the Wild, like, he's not even really part of the trade as far as the assets they're getting. He's the balance
out
the salary.
Yeah, he was
just
there to balance out the money, yeah.
Yeah. And then you roll the dice. Maybe he looks great down the stretch, and you know he likes it there, and he wants to re-up for a year or two on a low-risk deal, and maybe, or maybe not. Maybe you just he's looking at, I mean, what would this, like, his fourth team? And
Four teams in like 3 years.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, it's not just a change. Like, sometimes guys actually are a bad fit in one place and one scenario, and you got to get them out of there, and then it's okay again. But when you get to
that's just I mean that's just such an interesting draft overall, where it's like, who are the top three that year? It was Yakupov was one, so Ryan Murray two, Galchenyuk three. Who I don't remember who was next, but it's a guy who sucks. I'm not gonna pull it, but. Well, no, but, like, the top four is bad, but then, like, Morgan Riley's in that draft, Matt Dumba is in that draft.
Number four in that draft was Griffin Reinhardt. I just looked it up.
Well, there you go, yeah.
Yeah,
you're not wrong. And so Ryan was right, yes. Riley, Lindholm, Dumba, Trouba, Philip Forsberg.
That is a weird draft.
But, like, Hurdle was like, a mid-round pick that year.
Tom Wilson.
Right ahead of Teravainen.
Vasilevskiy.
And Vasilevskiy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, of course, the reason that seared into my brain is the Jankowski pick. But, you know.
Wow. Slater Cuckoo was a fucking 10th overall pick, huh?
Yep.
Wow.
But, hey, look, I mean, there's still time left for that promise of 10 years from now, Mark Jankowski is going to be viewed as the best player in this draft to come through.
Who said that?
Ooh, it was one of the Calgary Flames. It might have been Jay Feaster. It might have been somebody along those lines. But that was a real quote from somebody in the Flames front office when the Jankowski pick happened.
Wow.
Coming out of a league that had literally never produced a drafted prospect in the history of the NHL entry draft. So, clock's ticking.
While we're talking about Alberta for a second, that reminds me, we need to give a shout out to our good friend Thomas Drance.
Oh, yeah, that was cool.
For an all-time dunking on the hapless Mark Spector last night, when Drance tweeted, "I find it adorable that this Blackhawks team thinks they're still good," which is an amazingly great line.
Yep.
And then Spector, as he's wont to do, tweets a very poor take without any, you know, context or clarification or whatever. And then Drance just takes off from the foul line a la Michael Jordan in the goddamn slam dunk competition and writes, "Damn, it must be then, Mark. You would know." Kadoo.
Brutal.
Backboard shatters.
Dante Lamort. That's it.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Can we talk about that, actually? Chicago loses again. I don't know what their losing streak's up to now, but they suck. Why did everybody in the media, like, spend three separate weeks this season talking themselves into, you know, I think this team might get it together, actually. They got a good mix of young and old.
They got close. And
that was two or three points away and then faded again, just like they did a bunch of times last year.
But in the defense of the delusional, when your bedrock is some of the – like top six goaltending this year, I think, as far as team save percentage goes, like that's okay. Like that, like fucking Arizona is sniffing around the wild card with all goaltending and hardly anything else, right? So like it's the idea that they at least had that going for them.
Well, no, but
nice.
Like, I mean, I quote tweeted him from earlier this season this morning, but it was like, believe it, the Blackhawks are for real this year and all that shit. And it's like,
who, Lazarus wrote that?
Oh, I think it was Scott Powers, but he wasn't okay. The only one. Like, that was one of them, but he wasn't the only one. And it was like, I looked it up, and every time it was just like they would win four in a row and somebody would be like, this is it, they're taking off, and then they would lose 5 out of 6 or 6 out of 7 or whatever it is.
Close, but, and let's be honest, part of this is also, I think it's a couple of other things. Number one, we all know what happened with the Blues last year, so everyone's looking for the next Blues, right? And if you're going to be the team that makes the push, at some point you got to get within 2 or 3, and nobody wants to wait until a team's already made it all the way and then go, oh yeah, they're this year's Blues. We all got to pick it early, so that there's that. And also it's the fact that it's the Blackhawks, and they still have this like magic aura of winner dust floating around.
Jonathan Taves is the greatest leader
in the league, and Jonathan Taves can lead any team out of the abyss into contention. He knows how to lead. Now, has he won the Mark Messier Leadership Award? I don't know. That is the mark of true leadership.
Yeah, well, that's because he hasn't abandoned his team yet, which like 3 of the guys who won that award did the year that they won it.
There was a stretch in early to mid-November where they went 6-1-2. They're for real. They did it. Now, that followed a stretch where they went, let's see here, 3-6-3 to start the year.
Okay.
And then they go 6-1-2. Oh, they're about to take off. They're for real. They lose, 6 of the next 7 games. And then, you know, there's another stretch where they win. Let's see here. Looks like 6 of 8. They win 6 of 8, lose 2 in a row, win 5 in a row, and now they get to the point where they have lost
like 3 in a row, I think.
Well, 3 in a row, like, but they're 1-4-2 in the last 7. And it's like, on the whole, that they grade out to a team that, even with great goaltending, is like a game above NHL 500. They're 25-24-8. And it's like, that sounds about right, yes. That's even with great elite, borderline elite goaltending. This is all they were ever going to be, folks. I don't know what you were trying to talk yourselves into, but...
Well, I think maybe people were trying to talk themselves into that in the Western Conference, that was all it was actually going to take to get into the playoffs.
Yeah, that's a very good point, too.
Well, no, the problem is, if they were in the Pacific, we'd be having a different discussion altogether, but it turns out they are not.
They're still, they're still only fucking 6 points out of the last wild card right
with
now,
more
too.
Games played, though, right? Is that not the case?
No, they have two. They have 2 in hand on Arizona.
Oh, well, so, Arizona's like, another team I don't buy it with, but sure.
But here come the Blackhawks. Is all I'm trying to say.
Oh yeah, they're fucking right on top of it.
What do you think they do with the goaltending at the trade deadline? Do you think there's a chance that they trade Crawford? Like, do you think he'd leave?
Well, I think the real concern is that they try to add to, because jobs are on the line here, blah, blah. Like, everybody's been saying all season that if they don't make it this year, Stan Bowman's done. And so what's he going to do? Like, he's going to sit there
and get hired in New Jersey in a fucking millisecond is what's going to happen. Yeah. My God. The minute he walks out the door with his belongings in a box, there's going to be a fucking charter there.
And he's going to show up in New Jersey and he'll be like, all right, let's see. The last time I started a job as a GM... had a pretty good roster in place. What do we
Jonathan
got here?
Taves,
it's probably
Duncan
just as
Keith,
good.
That's so weird. That's almost exactly what Ray Shiro said.
I don't think they move Crawford unless they've got Leonard signed.
So
and even then, like, who do you – what contender needs a goaltender at that point? It's
Toronto.
Toronto might. But, I mean, even then, like, who's going to pay you
worth it? Freddie Anderson and Soupy Campbell got this thing on lock. No, the team that's interesting is the team that's wanted Robin Lehner for a little bit, which is Carolina. If they can get Lehner,
that might be the one. Yeah,
gig.
Yeah.
That'd be an interesting pick for them because they could use a little bit of a goaltending boost.
And they do. Apparently, it's weirdly in the last week, everybody got the memo that their first round pick was in play. So. Yeah, that might be the one. Because that's why you don't see midseason goaltending trades that much, because teams that have goaltending don't need goaltending, and teams that need goaltending are usually completely – their season's torpedoed by halfway through anyways, so they're not looking to add during the year. But, yeah, Carolina is maybe one that could make sense.
You know, for the power rankings this week, I did the worst deadline trade for every team. And I made it a rule that I wasn't going to include the Thrashers for Jets 2.0, and I wasn't going to include the Whalers for the Hurricanes, because that's just too easy. Like, the Whalers had, like, six really shitty yes. deadline trades. But I went through the Hurricanes' history, and I don't know if it's just a function of them never really being in contention or what, but, like, they've not really had many of them. Like, the closest one that came – I ended up going with the Stahl trade just because the prospect didn't work out, and the two picks didn't amount to anything, but they used one of the picks in the Teravainen deal. The only one that comes close was like a Tuomo-Rutu for Andrew Ladd swap at some point. Like, they just did, they're pretty good. Like, they make good decisions. But yeah, the Whalers would have been a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
A lot easier.
Yes, much that's easier. True. Did the Whalers make a bad trade deadline deal? I'm sure that did.
Yeah, once or twice.
Okay.
Once or twice. Well, there you go. So I think one of the goalies is getting traded. I do wonder – do you think the loyalty thing with Crawford comes into play, that they'll just let him kind of like find his next home and they won't like try to trade him?
Yeah, I mean, but maybe he wants out because, you know, he's splitting time and the team stinks and all this kind of stuff. Like, he's standing on his head every night and not getting anything to show for it in terms of results. So maybe he wants out like that.
Maybe he does.
That would make sense too. You know, like I say, it's one of those things where it's like, I'm kind of sitting here waiting for Stan Bowman to be like, you know, we're a Taylor Hall away from having it all figured out or whatever.
Well, there you go. Somebody's going to pack their bags. And if they do, they should make it an away bag. You know, away creates thoughtful products built for the way modern travelers see the world. You know what? I don't assume that everybody hears every episode. It might be new to somebody. They started with the perfect suitcase. Now they offer a range of essentials, all of which will make your travels much more seamless. I'm in a hotel room right now, somewhere in Colorado. I think it's near Red Rocks. On the bed, right over here, that I'm pointing to that you can't see, is an away bag. That's how much I love these bags. The suitcase is thoughtfully designed and very durable. It's got features that keeps all my shit organized. Easy to carry up and downstairs, as it's lightweight, and lift over your head to put into the airplane overhead compartment. Built-in lock that TSA won't question. And it's got a beautiful minimal design that you're going to dig. All their suitcases are designed to last a lifetime with durable exteriors that can withstand even the roughest of baggage handlers. I enjoy the four 360-degree spinny wheels that allows me to whirl my way through any airport. And then you can also kind of get the doodads on your bag too, including like portable chargers and things like that. There's a 100-day trial. It's a lot longer than the one in the Senate, right, Lambert? There's a 100-day trial.
The clowns in Congress are at it again, folks.
Topical.
On everything Away makes. Take the product out in the road. Live with it. Travel with it. Throw it against the wall. Jump on top of it. Get lost with it for 100 days. And if you decide it's not for you, you can return any non-personalized item for a full refund during that period. No ifs, ands, or asterisks. So don't, like, put, like, sea bass on the front of it, on a nameplate, and then expect that you can give it back to Away. It can't be personalized. It's just the normal bag. Away offers free shipping and returns on any order within the contiguous US, Europe, Canada, and Australia. To get your suitcase and travel essentials, visit awaytravel.com/puck. That's Away Travel, all one word, AWAY.
That's right. You got it.
TRAVEL.com/puck. awaytravel.com/puck for all your baggage needs. Sean, of course, we did a bonus episode without you this week, so I do want to get your opinion. We did the hockey Oscars.
Uh-huh.
What do you consider to be the finest hockey movie ever made?
The fun.
He's going to say one of those CBC made for TV ones.
Yeah, before
the Don Cherry story.
At the end of the episode, we did mention that these were just for motion pictures, and that all the Canadians listening, don't give us fucking Rocket or the Don Cherry movie or the Gordie Howe movie. Those are TV movies. Those are not real movies.
I see. No, I don't know what the best one ever made, but I'll tell you my personal favorite, Youngblood. I love Youngblood is just the perfect mix of good and terrible in just the right measures. And it's one of those movies for me that if you don't see it on TV a ton, but if you're flipping around and you happen to see it, I'm done. I'm sticking around until Racky gets his at the end, because I love Youngblood.
Do you think it's just like that's because of the age that you caught that movie or whatever? Because
I'm sure.
I don't know.
That 90% really of my pop culture things that I like are just because I was 15 when I was first exposed to it. That's pretty much it. But,
right.
But yeah, I mean, there's something about like a 35-year-old Patrick Swayze as a junior hockey player, you know, with playing on the same team as elite superstar prospect Rob Lowe, who can't turn when he's skating out there, and the like the crazy goalie masked guy doing the splits before the penalty shot with no time left. It's fantastic. Mm. It's a total mess, and I can't get enough of it.
Where are you on Goon?
Never saw it.
Oh wow, no. Really?
Interesting. I've heard it was good. So I imagine I probably would like it a lot, and I intended to see it, and I just never got around to it.
I think you'd really like it because it's Jay Baruchel, friend of the program, wrote a very knowing script. The main character is basically like a Mike Ribeiro proxy, if you understand the dynamics of Ribeiro's time with the Habs, for example. It's really good. The first Goon is legitimately one of the best hockey movies ever made.
It
second
is.
Second one.
That's true.
Oh, I think so.
No, I agree with you.
I thought you were – that was like it is?
No, we had a whole episode where we talked about how I liked it, so.
No, I mean, honestly, I remember a thing. I forget things as soon as
I didn't. Funny, you know, I haven't altitude gotten around sickness. To listening to your rankings. How high in the top five did Love Guru wind up?
The Love Guru was very well represented because we had a lot of categories for worst shit.
That was so terrible.
I believe Deepak Chopra was up for worst performance.
I think
as
three
Deepak
people
Chopra.
From it were up for worst. So yeah,
I can still have never seen it. Love never Guru. Will. Maybe I was going to say near the top of my list. It may be at the top of the list of the most disappointing movies ever. Like
when, yeah, question.
When Mike Myers was, this was not that far off, like the heights of Austin Powers. And when you found out that Mike mm-hmm. Myers was not only making a hockey movie, but was making a hockey movie about the Leafs winning the Stanley Cup, it was like, this has the potential to be amazing. And it was very, very not amazing. So
yeah, it was really rough.
Man.
Like, I don't want to say it was a disappointing movie, but at one point you find out that Justin Timberlake is a Palpatine. So it really is devastating to the viewers.
Right. Yeah.
The Love Guru was terrible. We did find out one amazing bit of trivia, though, that if the folks who haven't listened to the bonus episode, you may be interested in this. Rob Blake is in The Love Guru, and Rob Blake mm-hmm. plays a center for some reason yep. in The Love Guru. And Ryan discovered that right around – was it the filming or
around,
was it
around
when
it would
came?
Have been filmed based on
right.
the based on the release date.
Rob Blake actually took three face-offs that
it was,
season.
It was like four or eight or something like that. He took a number of face-offs in the NHL and the only ones of his career pretty much.
Yeah, and he took face-offs in that movie too. So his working theory is that he was testing out his face-off prowess – IRL
yeah.
to get in preparation for his role.
This is like
Love
a Daniel
Guru.
Day-Lewis method acting thing where
that's right.
I was watching Gangs in New York the other night, by the way. It's interesting. I think you could say that two of Scorsese's movies were sunk by bad performances by actresses.
And you're going to say Cameron Diaz for sure.
And Sharon Stone in Casino.
Casino.
Oh, you like her in that movie?
I mean, she's fine in it. Casino's great regardless of how you feel about her performance.
I enjoyed Gangs of New York for the sheer fact that her Irish accent is horrible, and DiCaprio just decides about 10 minutes into doing one that he's not going to really do it anymore.
Yeah, that's
he's
fine.
He's just going to be
good for him.
Leo DiCaprio. But that movie is so fun. The first 15 minutes of Gangs of New York might be the best first 15 minutes of any Scorsese movie. The fucking battle between Liam Neeson's Irish gang
oh,
and
I remember,
Bill the Butcher's
yeah.
gang.
Dead rabbits,
fuck,
sure.
It's so goddamn good.
Good movie.
Paul Maurice got signed. So scratch him off the Kraken list, huh, boys?
Apparently.
Yeah.
And you wonder if that leverage helped. I mean, I guess at the end of the day, his deal was up. They had to make a decision, and he has a team that I think is overachieving expectations. Now, there's a good case to be made that they're doing it in spite of the coach and not because of him. And that, you know, we've talked a lot this year. It seems like every time a coach gets fired, they just, you look at the goaltending column and they have bad goaltending. And Paul Maurice has had very good goaltending. And you wonder if this isn't something where Jets fans look back in a few years and go, that would have been the right time to move on and go in a different direction. But I get it. You know, when things are perceived as going well and your team's hanging in a playoff race, yeah, you probably want to give that vote of confidence, and that's what they've done. And I guess,
yeah, I mean, look, I think he's done a really good job telling Connor McDavid to make 31 saves every single night.
Connor Hollybuck.
Oh yeah, right, different guy. But yeah, telling him, why don't you go out there and stop 33 of 35? How's that sound? And he goes, mm-hmm. "You got it, coach.
You got it.
That's coaching, baby.
You got it, boss."
Do you guys realize that Paul Maurice by the end of this year is going to be fourth all time in games coached in the NHL?
That's wild.
Where is he in wins though?
I think he's
790th.
he is recently passed Mike Babcock and he will potentially pass
not
Lindy Ruff
for
top six. And then it'll be Al Arbor would be next. So I like for a guy who I still think is 35 years old, that's pretty good.
You know, but how many emotional breakdowns did he give his players on the bench? Still got him in that category?
Well, I mean, he did have one of his best players just walk away and
yeah, just
say,
completely
you know what,
quit the sport.
I don't think I want to.
No yeah, legs.
Here's your $8 million back. I'm out.
Damn, he really wanted to get out of Winnipeg. Who can blame him? Got him. Right? It's a hellhole. We all agree.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Never no been, parts. Never will go. That's fine.
Is it no parks?
No parks,
that's
no Wi-Fi.
That's what I keep hearing.
Yeah,
from no you parks. Mainly, doing an impression. Bad one, too. Mm-hmm.
No parks!
Yeah, that's the one.
There have been many places that have no parks.
I shouldn't
parks
have said
whatsoever.
Anything. I fucked up so bad.
Everybody
this is a huge mistake.
That you go to Winnipeg. There are no parks in Winnipeg. At all.
Dude, can we get the Air Force to blow you up at this game? It's fucking.
Thought you were going in a different direction there.
All right. So, if you were Ron Francis and you had your choice between Peter Laviolette and Gerard Gallant for Seattle, let's say, who would you hire?
Gallant.
Yeah, I'd probably go Gallant too, but those are both good choices. I think you'd be pretty good with either one of them. I mean, I take Gallant for the expansion experience card, but I like Laviolette a lot as a coach, so.
I would go Laviolette. I think he's a better coach. And I do wonder, lightning striking twice bit for Gallant with an expansion
right,
team.
Right. So, there is that to consider, but there's also the fact of, like, Laviolette kind of wore out his welcome maybe 2 years ago in Nashville and, you know,
yeah,
stuck around and that kind of thing. Like, I wonder how much that matters when you're taking over a team of a lot of veterans, I guess.
Yeah, but don't worry, they fixed it. They brought in John Hines to play Philip Forsberg 10 minutes to give him a lesson.
That really is the fucking John Hines experience, huh? It's like, we're gonna give Austin Watson 17 minutes tonight. Ryan Johansson, how's 8 sound? I mean, that's weird, I guess, but...
Yeah, no, it's going great. Like, what do you even fucking do? Like, that's the whole point. I don't understand. I will not ever understand bringing this guy in on a multi-year deal, how you know this is the guy you want. You haven't even fucking interviewed anybody else. And then if you don't make the playoffs, what do? You tell your fans, don't worry, we're bringing back the coach that couldn't get shit done. Everybody get excited.
Apparently. Yeah, I wonder if you can if you would just say, you know, Laviolette screwed us. What were we supposed to do? You know, I don't know.
It's such a bizarre... Well, I mean, it's not bizarre. It's all nepotism at the end of the day. But, like, you know, it's still a strange move. Not a strange move. Vancouver Canucks, last night as we do the show, retiring the numbers of Henrik and Daniel Sedin at a raucous pregame ceremony highlighted by the great Kevin Bieksa doing a roast of the Twins.
Absolutely, that's what it was.
And it was awesome. It was so fucking funny. The greatest concept I ever heard, and I can't believe none of us have ever done this concept, that they actually didn't have Twins like sonar, but had small listening devices at all times on the ice.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
He was really good. Like, if the video is floating around, I've got it in my piece tomorrow, and I know it's 7 minutes long, which I realize on the internet is like asking somebody to watch a 4.5 hour movie, but like, carve out the time and just watch it, because it's especially like Drance actually, I think, had a piece on The Athletic today about like what was the deal with that, like where did that come from, and like he just kind of got up and winged it, like he didn't even have any speaking notes or anything, which is just, if you've ever had to do public speaking and tried to be funny in front of an audience, makes you want to strangle this guy, because he was like so good at it and was just effortless, and it was the sort of thing. I mean, he talked for, I mean, it wasn't quite 7 minutes from when he started talking, but it was five or six. Like, if it hadn't gone well, it would have just been, that could have been death. Like, he would have had to have bailed immediately and gotten out of there.
He had a tight five plus for sure.
But he was solid, yeah. Man. He was really good.
He definitely did.
Yeah. And he's been good. Like, we've been getting him on Hockey Night in Canada up here. They're kind of breaking him in as an analyst, and he's been really good, and a guy I didn't think would have been. He didn't strike me as the sort of guy when he was playing that was going to be this good on the media side. Yeah. He's been real good, and he
played college hockey, didn't he? Like,
his classic like comedic moment as a player was sort of prickish. So I wasn't sure how that would translate. It was when he pretended to be Ryan Kessler to the Fox reporter. Mm-hmm. Which is one of the funniest fucking things I've ever seen. But yeah, I mean, like, he turned out to be a funny goofball kind of guy in his humor after his playing days, which is awesome.
And a good ceremony, top for bottom, top to bottom. Like, you know, it was kind of cool to have a Sedin week. I still feel like they're sort of underappreciated as star players go, and it was nice for Vancouver to get to have that moment with them.
No, they're properly appreciated as borderline Hall of Famers, I think.
Yeah, well, I don't appreciate them. That Thelma and Louise act over there. Meh, I'm going to hit somebody with my shoe. Fucking Milbury. Remember that shit? The fucking final.
Yeah, it's almost like he was a Boston Bruins employee for a long time, that kind of thing, and then he gets to comment. That's the thing that drives me fucking crazy about, like, you know, you expect your homers on your local broadcasts and stuff like that, but when they keep, and I bring this up sometimes, but like when they were like, now Keith Jones, you cash a check from the Flyers, what do you think about the Tampa Bay ragging the puck thing? What do you think about that? And he's like, I think it's awesome. I think it's the coolest thing that's ever happened in hockey. Cool. All right, man. Sounds good.
Your tight 5.5 for BX made me think that, like, at one point there was a chance that, like,
they gave
Jim
him the
Benning
light.
Comes over and says, sorry, Kevin, we got to bump you. Louis C.K. is doing a drop-in for the Sedin's roast or some shit.
Maybe not him.
Oh, no, totally. I think he plays well in Vancouver.
But I will say this, though.
Yes.
Ken Bieksa, NHL Awards. Folks,
ooh,
he couldn't be worse than what they've brought to the table in the past.
God, you're right.
Especially
That's
since
true.
We can't do the gritty takes off his mask and it's Bettman thing anymore. So this, this might
because
be
because gritty.
I had
may
not
have
even thought
assaulted.
Of that, but that's yeah.
You're right.
But only if it's a roast. Only if he's like the Ricky Gervais of like the NHL awards. Just gets up there and just craps all over whoever happens to be about to get the award. I'd be in for that.
Yeah, I'd love to see Kevin BX up there going, "Have I offended you, mate? Have I?
Am I too offensive?"
You're all out there saying,
triggered.
"Thank God I won the Selkie." Well, there is no God. Fuck off.
the thing, and you're right, by the way, because it was like entertaining for 7 minutes, which means the NHL will pound it into the ground and ruin it.
Oh yeah.
Very good point. Now, let me ask you about the Sedins in the Hall of Fame. I first will say that they definitely should go on the same plaque, but Henrik told me years ago they don't want to. So I guess maybe it won't happen, but it should, right? Like, we all agree
on
that,
right?
Well,
the joke yesterday was that only one of them should get in. A bunch of people said that. Like, only Daniel. He had a higher career war and 20 fewer games, so that's why only he should get in.
And I know that's the joke, but the Hall of Fame selection committee being what they are, that's probably what's going to happen. Like, they're the people that kept Pat Burns out until he died. Like, they clearly don't care about what the good thing to do would be. So it's entirely possible that they'll put it in one city.
Well, no, I mean, their resumes
the
are just so similar. Like, I, you know, they both won an MVP award and that kind of stuff. Like,
yeah.
No, one of them won an MVP
only
award.
One
came in second.
One MVP, one of them won what I think was the Pearson, now the Ted, like the player.
That's what it was. Right. Yes.
And they both won an Art Ross as well.
Yeah,
the year Corey Perry won the Hart?
Yeah, and he shouldn't have.
It was the 50 goal year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that's right. I think they're both strong. I think they're both going to get in. I've kind of talked in the past about how playing for just one team, especially if it's a big-ish market or an influential market, helps. The fact that, you know, the Twins, it's just such a cool story. Like, they've got all these little intangibles to their case, plus the fact that they both did win major awards, so they were at least at some point seriously in the conversation of, like, best in the game, as opposed to a guy like Alfredson, who's got similar stats, maybe even a bit better, but never quite got to that level in his best year. I think they're both getting in. Whether it's the first year, first ballot or whatever, it'll because there's two of them and they only have four spots for the on the men's side. It's possible they may have to wait till a year that isn't quite as quite packed. But I mean, I think they're eligible next year. So next year isn't a crazy strong year. I could see them both going in.
I think it's interesting. I'd be interested to see. I was going to say if they're first ballot or not, because that's the real hangup that the Hall of Fame seems to have with these players. But I wrote about this in the column this week, and I hadn't really thought of it in these terms before. But it kind of bummed me out as a hockey fan because, you know, we constantly please like my sport, our game, and, you know, lament the fact that it's not bigger here in the States. But, like, can you imagine if there were identical twins? And one of them was a quarterback and one of them was a receiver and did what the Sedins did. Or, like, there was a pitcher and his identical twin was the catcher and, like, they did what the Sedins did. Like, if you had this incredible thing where they're identical twins, they're playing on the same team, and they accomplish what they accomplish in another sport, they'd be fucking legends. There would already be a biopic about
them. Are you suggesting that the Lopez twins are not at the same?
I not the same. Hmm. Not the same. But it's kind of bums you out as a hockey fan. Like, this was one of the most unique acts in sports history.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe Sweden, maybe Vancouver, maybe hockey, I don't know. But I feel like the general sports fan, there's no way the general sports fan ever appreciated what the fuck was happening with the Sedins for the last 15 years.
Probably not. And the other piece that we should appreciate, and I had a few people bring this up yesterday because I was complaining yet again about wimpy GMs never making trades. The crap that Brian Burke had to pull off to draft both of these guys on the draft floor was just fantastic. Like, I Brian Burke as a GM, all sorts of pluses and minuses, but Brian Burke just as a trading GM, one of the all-time best characters, and, like, just all sorts of fun to watch. Like, the clips that are out there of him on the draft floor, like, basically just bullying guys into, like, you're doing this, then you're taking this guy, and if you don't take the guy you told me I was going to take, I'm going to run up and break. Like, I mean, he's just, like, directing traffic, and all these other GMs are standing around like, yes, sir, no, sir. It's fantastic to watch, and I'm so glad he did, because, I mean, that if two different teams had drafted these guys, they both would have eventually played. They would have had great careers, I'm sure, but it would not have been anywhere near the same. Like, just I'm so glad that somebody took the bull by the horns and figured out a way to make it happen that they both wound up in the same team.
Yeah, I mean, the thing you can say about Burke's entire career as a GM, basically, is that he understood the value of a star. And, you know, very few other GMs.
And
you know,
he
I
also,
think there was a quote.
For a guy quote, that like, was Sorry, you finish your point, and then I'll...
There was a quote this week where a bunch of GMs were like, well, you know, we'd like to make some changes or whatever, but we don't want to disrupt our chemistry this year and that kind of stuff. And it's like, how are we still talking about this in 2020? Mm-hmm. You know, like, it's crazy that we're still hearing about how important chemistry is. We don't want to make the team better because... We might get some people mad or whatever.
I said this week, like, for 11 months of the year, we treat hockey players as these grizzled warriors who will crawl on broken glass to win the Stanley Cup. And then for a few weeks, we're all worried that they're going to be too sad if their friend gets traded away and they won't be able to play anymore.
Yeah, a guy comes in like, and he hasn't earned it by being there the first 58
games.
That's
going to throw off the chemistry.
Oh, yeah. That was like a thing about, like, if you add somebody to your top six...
It bumps everybody
sad about getting bumped out. Like, which is the complete opposite of the way these things work, which is it makes people play fucking harder to get their spot back.
I mean, like,
or to earn their ice time.
Chemistry does matter, but I wrote this week, if your chemistry is so fragile that even adding somebody can blow it up, then maybe your chemistry isn't very good to start with. Like, maybe real chemistry is the ability to add and subtract and all this other stuff. I don't know. But
it's also just horseshit. Like probably, when the fucking Coyotes made the Taylor Hall trade, where they all, like, bitching and moaning, being like, well, what about Lawson Krause's ice time? You know, like, fuck off.
Mm-hmm.
It's nonsense.
Anyways,
to do the Arn Anderson. You're not just getting any spot on the Arizona Coyotes. You're getting my spot. Not my dog's spot.
That's right. That's right.
So the point I wanted to make about Burke, and it's related to this, is just – and then we can move on – is he – when it for a guy who is very sensitive about the media almost all the time, Brian Burke, when it came time to make a trade, didn't give a crap what anyone thought. Or he didn't sit around and talk himself out of it because he was going to get criticized or because it might look this or that. If he was going to blow up the future to get Phil Kessel and he thought that was it, he went and did it. If he was going to go get the Sedins, he went and did it. If he was going to make a trade for Chris Pronger, he went or trade him away, he went and did it. I wish more GMs had that element to their game. The league would be a lot more fun if we didn't have so many of these little timid, risk-averse guys who don't want to get criticized.
If he's going to hire Ron Wilson to coach the Maple Leafs, he goes ahead and does it even before he's legally allowed to GM the Maple Leafs.
Yeah, exactly.
I believe it was a sequence of events.
He's that kind of forward-thinking guy.
Baseball things real quick. So Major League Baseball is stealing the Southern Professional Hockey League's idea of having wild card teams pick their opponents, or division champs pick their opponents, I suppose, also. The Southern Professional Hockey League did this for a couple seasons. I asked their commissioner. He said they're not doing it anymore because of the travel considerations were too much to deal with.
Mm.
With, like, teams sort of, like, you know, maybe potentially picking somebody on the fly and then like the next couple days you're all of a sudden playing. I've talked about this idea for a long time. On the one hand, I think teams are boring and teams will not take the risk.
Correct.
Of not picking the team that they're seeded to play for out of concern that they'll get swept and then someone gets fired because of the decision.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think this format is interesting if there is a catastrophic injury that occurs before the playoffs. And let's say you're Vancouver and you're seeded to play, the Jets. And then, like, Vegas, like, fucking Fleury blows out his knee in the last game of the season. Well, now you might have a decision to make. Now you might actually want to play Vegas because you're going to play Malcolm Subban for 7 games.
And then your GM picks to play them and you lose the series and everybody wants the GM fired. Like that.
Correct.
This is why I love this idea. The first time I heard it, it may have been from you and Merrick way back when. I love the idea in theory, and if it works in baseball – awesome. Like, the idea of having a Selection Sunday show would be crazy. I would love to watch that. It would never work in hockey. I just finished saying, these GMs are so risk-averse and so terrified of being criticized and doing anything that's going to put them at danger of being fired that there is no chance any team would ever go out on a limb and pick anyone other than who they're supposed to. Like Julian right. Breezebaugh last year when the Lightning lose to the Blue Jackets, he took some criticism. He probably would have taken more if he had been on the job longer, but most of it fell on the players, most of it fell on the coach. If they had been supposed to have played the Hurricanes and Julian Breezebaugh yes, said, absolutely. No, we're going to play the Blue Jackets and they get swept, he gets fired like the next week. And if he doesn't, every fan for the rest of his career is like he's lost everyone. There's no way. I mean, these GMs have voted themselves stupid rules and stupid standings that make everyone over 500. Like, this entire league is a confidence scam to make 31 GMs look good. There is no chance in hockey
absolutely.
That they would ever have this rule that would actually make them, even though absolutely they would. There would be times where picking a different team would make you more likely to win. That's not their priority. Their priority is their own job security, and this would be really, really bad for their job security.
Yeah.
The other baseball thing we should mention is the cheating scandal. The Astros finally met the media at spring training, and their owner Jim Crane said that, quote, "Our opinion is that this didn't impact the game. We had a good team. We won the World Series, and we'll leave it at that." So,
well, that's
literally
it.
Saying,
that's it then.
I just, what the fuck?
We're going to leave it at that. It's yeah.
that was discussion terrible. Over.
That was
discussion
like,
over. Yeah.
2 months of this story, and like they finally sit down to talk to the media, and they were awful. And like somebody said on Twitter, like if only they had somehow known what was coming. They probably would have performed a lot better, but what a clown show
do
that
you,
whole thing
do
has
you
been.
Think they should have been stripped of their championship for cheating?
I don't think you can. I think that's just a terrible precedent to say, like, we're going to open up this door of going back and saying retro. And I know they do it in college sports, but nobody really pays attention to it. I don't like that. I'm sure you could come up with some fictional scenario where I'd have to acknowledge that, maybe you do got to go back at that point. But I just don't like the idea of changing the results of anything. Like once it's done, it's done. And you can punish moving forward, but the strip championships and that, there's something about that just makes me worry that once you crack that door open, it can go in some weird places.
Mm. What about you, Ryan? Would you strip them of their championship?
No, I think it's definitely the thing of, old people going like, well, you just put an asterisk on. I think that almost kind of, because like when people would say that about guys who, juiced or whatever.
Yeah.
That's different because it's just one guy. But when a team is institutionally cheating, you know what I mean? Like that's when it becomes more of an argument to me. I personally still don't think I would do it, but like I now definitely see where you would go like, yeah, that makes perfect sense. Like the whole fucking team was cheating pretty much the entire year. So, and like it wasn't like some guys knew and some guys didn't. There's no way, some guys were like, damn, we were cheating? That's crazy. So
yeah, I mean, you're talking about the steroids thing makes me. I think the reason that MLB wouldn't strip them is because it's hard to believe they're the only team that did this.
Right.
It's very hard for me to believe that they're the only team that did this.
So what do you do? Do you say there's no champion that year, or do you say like the Dodgers are the champion? But then we find out the Dodgers were doing something.
Yeah,
and then
works in NCAA is you just go there wasn't a champion that year.
Mm-hmm. Garbage pro sports league would have no champion in a given year. I mean, that's
look. I think the only thing you do is you eliminate everyone you think could have been cheating and give it to the team that everyone knows wasn't cheating, which is the Mets. So, right there, problem there solved. Yeah,
flawless. No, I can see no objection.
Two more things: Sonic the Hedgehog movie. Did anyone play Sonic as a kid? Because I didn't. I was a Nintendo boy.
I played a little bit of it. I wasn't a platform guy, but.
Yeah. What was the appeal? Like, why did you like it?
He was fucking fast. You hear about this?
So it's like if Mario gets the star and yeah. it's just like a
yeah,
game
but a
of
whole except game faster. Of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just like it was when you really got like a head of steam going on that game, you were whipping through levels at speeds that, you know, you would just never experience in a video game before.
I'm interested by something. I have a theory about Sonic the Hedgehog. I'm gonna test it now. Did you have Hot Wheels when you were a kid?
I did not.
Okay. That was my theory that like kids with Hot Wheels that like to make loopy loops with their Hot Wheels like Sonic the Hedgehog because you make loopy loops in the game.
I think it's more kids who had a Sega Genesis got
yeah, I
Sonic
had a Sega
because
Genesis,
it came with
so I
it.
Didn't get to play
so,
fucking Link to yeah. the Past.
So you played that and you were like, yeah, this is reasonably fun. And then your friend
game.
brought over NHL 94 and you were like, oh, let's do this.
Ryan, you see every movie. Will you be seeing Sonic the Hedgehog with Jim Carrey as Dr. Robotnik?
I would say that that's a pretty good bet, yeah. I'm not the movie that I'm most likely to see this weekend specifically is the Force Majeure remake that I'm pretty convinced is going to be bad, but you never know, I guess.
For those of you who are now not afraid of subtitles – because of Parasite.
Hell yeah.
Go watch Force Majeure.
Force Majeure is
a comedy
so
classic,
funny.
In my opinion. Yeah, it's terrific. It's the movie that he's talking about is Downhill with Will Ferrell and Julia Louis-Dreyfus, where there's an avalanche. Rather than protecting his family, the father runs away in cowardice. And it sets off a chain reaction of, like, two people, like, reconsidering their relationship and shit like that. It's really, really fucking... Yeah. It sounds... Not funny, but it's very funny.
It's
and
really,
very dark.
Really good.
Yeah, it's good.
It started out as a Swedish movie, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe Norwegian, but...
I mean, Norwegian,
from like
yeah.
3 or 4 years ago, and then, yeah, they're making a... With, Will Ferrell, Julia Louis-Dreyfus. I think the guy who played Tormund Giantsbane on Game of Thrones is reprising his role from the original.
Is Will Ferrell the right guy for that role? I think of more of like a Paul Giamatti type.
Oh
for that
my
role.
God, that would have been perfect. Oh
yeah,
fuck. All right, well,
I know. Self-loathing but self-righteous.
Yeah,
I mean, Will Ferrell kind of strikes me as like he'll do a lot of that sort of like squinty-eyed stunned thing, and I don't know. I would recast that, but I'll see the movie because it was also written by the dudes who wrote The Descendants as well.
Yes,
so,
Jim Rash and Matt Faxon. Yes,
yeah, the George Clooney movie, not the Disney movie where the children of the villains all go to the same school.
I thought that
that's
was
a different
TV
Descendants.
Show. That wasn't. That's a movie.
It's a TV movie, a lot like all of the great Canadian hockey movies.
Ah, got
yes.
it.
Yes. Who also back. Probably at some point featured Maleficent's daughter. Last thing, I know Ryan doesn't want to talk about it, but we should mention it. Jeremy Roenick takes to the Twitter airwaves with a post that says, "What a joke!" 2 exclamation points, and announces that he is no longer on NBC.
Yeah, and does a video which is like quasi apologetic and like not even apologetic, but like seems to at least be somewhat taking it seriously. And you can just picture like the PR person being like, okay, good. I got him to record this video. He seems like a sort of a human being. And then walking away and on the drive home being like, I told him not to tweet this with some smart ass comment, right? And sure enough, he tweets it out as "what a joke"
but
to make it
that's
very
the thing,
clear
though,
that
his original video that he did was the PR apology thing. This one, I thought, was a bit more of the, you know, I got done wrong and don't worry about me. I'm
that,
coming
there was
back.
A not too hard to read between the lines subtext of that, but also it could have been played off as like him. Whatever. But then, yeah, when he tweets it out as "what a joke," it's very clear that he's not he's very much playing the victim card. And
I will reiterate what I've said to many people. The thing he said about Catherine Tappan will get him fired at any company if it gets taken to HR and they're like, here's what this dude said about his coworker that he works directly with.
And said publicly. Like, that's the... I
and
mean,
said
that's
publicly.
Right.
I don't care that it's a joke. I don't care that they're friends away from who cares? Like, you just can't say that. But the thing that I think is important here to remember is that, much like with the Don Cherry situation, you need to follow the money. I don't think they necessarily loved Jeremy Roenick on this broadcast. I thought that maybe, you know, as when you start to see guys taken out of one role and thrown into another role, it is because they are trying to find a reason to keep him around. And so when Jeremy Roenick goes from the wide-eyed guy who says nothing on the between period show to dressing like a fucking leprechaun and, you know, throwing hatchets or whatever the fuck he does at the outdoor games, it's because they're trying to find a way to use this guy that they're paying. So don't give them a reason to get rid of you is the moral of the story. If you're Don Cherry, don't say some shit that they will then use to get rid of you and then not have to worry about whether or not you want to come back, which is the real headache for CBC. If you're Jerry Roenick, you know, don't be flippant about your female coworker, and then they won't have a reason to then get you off their fucking payroll, which is what they probably wanted to do anyway. Moral of the story.
Yeah, could be true.
Probably is true. Follow the money. That's what Deep Throat said in All the President's Men. Although, didn't really say it in real life. That was an invention for that great film. That's today's movie fact.
All right.
Anything else we missed from this jam-packed week?
Probably.
Yeah.
All right, good.
I bet there is. Oh, well. Too late.
Fantastic. All right. That's the show. If you're in Denver, say hi. I'll be at the Avs game tonight. And then, I mean, by the time you hear this, I'll already have been at the Avs game. But I'll be at the Stadium Series game in Colorado Springs on Saturday. Very excited to, once again, witness and experience the pageantry of our nation's Air Force. You could read my column, The Wish List, on ESPN.com this week. Oh, with the Olympics. Fuck, we didn't talk about that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Real quick, it's a sham.
Yeah.
I was on the side of the NHL for a very long time on the IOC issue. I still am. I want them to get as much as they can out of those crooks and those miscreants that run the Olympics.
Okay, which crooks are we talking about?
The IOC.
Oh, okay.
But when the IOC comes a crawling back, and do credit Gary Bettman for saying, we're not going to go, and then not going, and then the IOC seeing a pathetically bad hockey tournament that where the ratings were trash and no one even cared about it, and then crawling back to the NHL with concessions on travel money and insurance money and loosening the restrictions on marketing the players and marketing the league – kudos to Bettman. He called their bluff and won that hand. But let's call the NHL's bluff. This shit's not about the Olympics.
Yeah,
this shit is about using the Olympics to leverage the players to extend the CBA. And the players have a very, very interesting counter argument here, which is that they can read a fucking calendar. The Olympics are going to happen months before the current CBA expires. There's no reason why this event that happens under the current CBA should affect what happens in the next CBA.
Right.
It is horseshit.
It's about leverage. It's all about leverage. Anything that happens between the players and the league is always about leverage. And it's there is no partnership here. This is Gary Bettman and friends realizing that they can extract concessions from the NHLPA in exchange for them doing something that's in the NHL's best interest anyways. And it's probably going to work. Credit to them, because Gary Bettman's good at you know, squeezing every bit of value out of CBAs that he can, and he's doing it again. But it's very transparent, and fans should understand what's happening. And if the PA caves, then because they really want to go to the Olympics, then fine. But if they don't, do not get suckered in by turning around and blaming the players, because it got... I mean, this was in my mind always what this was about, but at least there was the IOC stuff. Once the IOC yanks that carpet out from underneath the owners, it's now very transparent what's happening here, and fans should understand that.
It was always transparent.
Yeah, I would argue it always was, but now it's really transparent. Like, there is no more IOC stuff to point to.
Yeah. Sean's right. I mean, like, at least at one point they could have the cover of, well,
you have to be a fucking sucker to buy that shit.
But it was part of it. But now they have no cover.
It wasn't really part of it. It was all fucking fake.
No, it wasn't all fun. I disagree with you. The IOC pulled the basic funding that they had previously for insurance, for housing, for shit like that. They rolled it back. Like, the NHL had no fucking reason to go if they weren't going to get the basic funding they always got. So there was something to that. There was definitely something to that. But now it's,
well, it's gone now. It's just a CBA issue. And yet Gary Bettman is going to try to, you know, the players are going to have to give up this, this, and this in order to get the league to agree to something that's in that the league should want and probably at this point secretly does want. And if it works, it works. But if it doesn't work, like I said, don't let yourself get suckered into the way that the league is going to spin this.
There you go. All right. So we did think about something that we didn't talk about. That's very exciting. Good job out of us. Say hi to me at the outdoor game. Read my column. ESPN on Ice. Me and Emily talked to Willie O'Ree, and it was great. You should check it out.
Sign up for the Puck Soup newsletter on the Patreon 2-3 times a week. Just hockey thoughts from and pop culture stuff from me. So check it out.
You can find my stuff on The Athletic. I had this week the post that I kind of already talked about where I go down the list of excuses that your favorite team's GM is going to make for not making any trades in the next few days and which ones actually have some credibility behind them and which ones decidedly do not. So check that out. And on Friday in the grab bag, we're going to have some fun with some very awkward old NHL commercials.
Brilliant.
1990s, in which the NHL decided the best way to market the sport was by making all their star players look like big jerks who enjoyed screwing with people. It was quite the mix of campaigns. So check that out.
And also, and then they learned their lesson because after the lockout, they decided to not feature the players in a commercial and just have a samurai warrior.
Yeah,
so that's and exciting.
That was so fucking good. Damn, I forgot about that.
You right?
Hell yeah.
One of the strangest fucking things. If you haven't seen that, that might be a bonus episode in and of itself. But like,
might have
if you've not seen that commercial, go back and find that shit. Ooh. The best way to get the fans coming back after we canceled the season is by having a samurai who looked like Kirk Muller fucking be in a locker room by himself and reappropriate someone else's culture to sell hockey.
Okay, just but insane. In their defense, there's no way anyone involved in that commercial knew who Kirk Muller was, so...
Very true. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening to Dumb Podcast. Check out the mailbag, bonus episode, me and Lambert talking about the hockey Oscars and all that good stuff. Thanks for supporting the show, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye.
See you.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got spoiler commentary to what if you commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Box soup.